Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cover story when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political, and of social activities free from government surveillance. Well, you know, I wished I would have thought of that, but that quotation isn't mine. It comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, you know, our princes, our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians. It doesn't come from our lawyers or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America now is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And best of all, it's free. And that number again is 417-273-4967. Now, our school courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org and the archives page. All right, last time we took a look at this thing, the cover story. I told you about vaccination, census, and voting. And each time when we see one of these subjects come up, there's a cover story that goes along with it. Vaccination, for instance, remember, that's to prevent disease. The real reason is to sell vaccine. Census. Well, the reason we need a census is so we can apportion the representatives. The real purpose behind the census is to gain information about you so that we can control you more effectively. When we take a look at voting, the reason for voting is so that you can exercise your free will to select the people who are going to rule over you. No, the purpose for voting is to create a guardian ward relationship so that we can more effectively control you. So in the last session, I said, I don't need to vote. I'm politically competent. I can exercise all of my own political rights. Don't need anybody going to Washington to represent me at all. I can take care of myself and the rest of you people. If you can't, maybe you do need a guardian. I'm not suggesting to you that freedom is for everybody. I'm just suggesting to you that maybe there's some of us out here that don't need a guardian, don't need a vaccination, don't need to be counted. So I said in the last program, let me take up another cover story over here. It's called Legal Firearms for Prohibited Persons. Now, we have a constitutional provision in our Constitution, Second Amendment, that says that everybody has a right to keep and bear arms. Our Supreme Court ruled on that. It was a split decision, 5-4, but they said it's an individual right to keep and bear arms. But the powers that be, that is the Congress of the United States, if they had their druthers, they would eliminate that Second Amendment. And they would take away not just the rights to keep and bear arms from people that are fugitives or mental defectives or illegal aliens. They would take away the right to keep and bear arms from everybody. Everybody. They don't believe for a minute. Dianne Feinstein does not believe for a minute that any person, period, should keep and bear arms. None. Now, our founding fathers had a different philosophy concerning the right to keep and bear arms. And then over the years, Congress has come in and chipped away at that. And we have around 24,000 gun regulations and laws on the books now. See, our courts have said, while it may be a right for you to travel, we can regulate the way you do it. It may be a right for you to keep and bear arms, but we can regulate that right. I'm not here to argue about the wisdom of the regulation of the right. Maybe that's good. You know, you've got a right to free speech, but you don't have a right to yell out fire, fire in a crowded theater. So it is true that people will misuse their rights. If you give somebody a right, you give them a privilege, you give them latitude, and there's going to be somebody that will go out there and misuse it. It's always been the case. I presume it always will be. In other words, if you give people the right to keep and bear arms, some people will go out there and use them inappropriately and kill somebody with them. Now, it is true that people do misuse their rights or their privileges and immunities. People drive automobiles. And it is true that some people drive those automobiles irresponsibly and harm others. Well, God in the Bible has a modality for dealing with that. And we rejected that. We said, God, we don't like your negligent statutes, and we're not going to practice that. We're going to create our own. And we did. We have our own negligent statute. And we have totally ignored those of the Scripture. Well, you've got a right to do that, you know, if you want to. God himself gave it to you. He said, choose. And you chose. You know, in 2008, you had a right to choose, and you chose. And so now you got to live with those. My old granny used to say, you know, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. Well, now, when it comes to firearms over here, there's some exceptions to the rules that nobody tells you about. And so they enact laws, and then when they get these laws enacted, they don't tell you all of the story. They don't tell you about the butt-saps and the exceptions to the rules. It's kind of like vaccination. They'll pass a law of what we call general application. And then it says all children must be vaccinated to attend public schools, and then they put in there the butt-saps. So when you're talking to the public officials, they say it's the law. They have to be vaccinated. They don't go a step further and say, but sept, if you have a religious objection, or but sept, if you have a medical objection, you could be excused for that. They never tell you that. And why is that? Well, because they don't want you to take that exception. They don't want you to be outside. We got everybody, and we want everybody in the game. Well, the same thing's true here when it comes to legal firearms for prohibited persons. There are people that are fugitives, mental defectives, illegal aliens, users of drugs or marijuana, those who have renounced their citizenship, former military personnel with dishonorable discharges, persons subject to domestic restraining orders, and persons convicted of misdemeanor domestic crimes of violence, threatening your wife 20 years ago would be enough, persons who have been convicted of a crime potentially punishable by more than a year in prison, a bad check conviction from 40 years ago could suffice for that. Well, now, if we take a look at these and analyze them for a minute, let's think about this. It probably makes some sense to deprive somebody of having a gun if he's going to misuse it, or if we think he's going to misuse it, or it's been demonstrated that these people misuse this from time to time, or maybe even more than just time to time. I mean, that would make sense. But let me ask you this. Let's think about this for a minute. Let's suppose you got a person over here who has renounced their citizenship. What's the purpose for taking away his right to keep and bear arms? And the cover story is, well, to protect the public's health, safety, and welfare. The reason that we want to prevent mental defectives from having a gun is that people that are mentally defective won't know right from wrong, and so they'll go out and use a gun and they'll harm people. Do mental defectives obey the laws? I mean, if the guy's mentally defective, what would make you think that he could understand the law and then obey it so that he would say to himself, well, I'm not going to buy a gun because I'm a mental defective, and because I'm mentally defective, I might hurt somebody, and so, therefore, I won't buy a gun. Now, what in the hell are we talking about here? If the guy's mentally defective, then he's mentally incompetent of choosing right from wrong. If he can't choose right from wrong, the law doesn't mean anything to him. So I guess what that means is, well, I'm selling guns, and so I can't sell this gun to a mental defective. So when you come up to the counter, I say, well, are you mentally defective? Well, if the guy is mentally defective, is he going to say, I'm mentally defective? Because if he is mentally defective, does he have the capability of self-diagnosis? Can he diagnose himself as being mentally defective? I'm not really sure that rule or that law there is aimed at mental defectives, or that mental defectives are in some way responsible for the bulk of many of the homicides or the shootings that go on. But I'm not an expert in the field, but just using common sense, I would say I don't think that rule, regulation, custom, usage, and practice makes any sense, or that it's going to protect you or me from somebody that's mentally defective from owning a gun. How about an illegal alien? Let's suppose a guy comes into the country and he's an illegal alien. Maybe he comes from Mexico. Why shouldn't he have a gun? What is it that makes an illegal alien more susceptible to some gun violation or some act of violence than somebody that is a legal alien? And let's go back here to asking the question, well, let's suppose that law is aimed at me, and the illegal alien wants to buy a gun, and I ask him, are you an illegal alien? Is he going to say, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm an illegal alien, so you shouldn't sell a gun to me because I'm on the list? Isn't he going to say, no, I'm a legal alien? And I say, well, prove it. Isn't he going to prove it by providing me with some kind of false or stolen identification? How is that going to protect the public? Well, I suppose after he has used the gun illegally and caused somebody a damage, I guess at that point in time, but then the act has already been done, and now that the act is done, isn't he subject to prosecution for murder or assault with a deadly weapon, just like anybody else, whether he was on the list or off of the list? What difference does it make if we put him on the list? Here's one. Let's suppose that you're a person who has been convicted of a crime, and the crime that you were convicted of was punishable by more than 1 year in prison. Let's suppose that you wrote a bad check. Let's suppose that you were imprisoned because you wrote a bad check. You intended to steal by writing a bad check. You did a bad act. You are a bad person because you stole money by writing a bad check. But why would we want to put that person on a list and say he shouldn't exercise his Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms? When a man has paid his price, when a man has made a mistake and he's been convicted and punished and sent to jail, shouldn't we forgive him from that point on? Even God Almighty forgives people after they have paid the penalty, doesn't he? Isn't that what all you religious guys are out here honking the horns? And, you know, honk your horn if you know Jesus. Have you seen those bumper stickers, you know, honk your horn? Aren't you talking about Jesus and forgiveness and all this good stuff? Well, then, let's suppose the guy did write a bad check. You know, he went to jail for 5 years. He's out of jail. Is this guy, the cover story says, is that we need to take this gun away from this guy because he's a threat to the rest of us. Why is a guy a threat to us because he wrote a bad check? Now, if you said, well, this guy's running around murdering people, I can understand the logic behind that. You got this maniac running around shooting people. Yeah, he's violent. Now, you know, you could say, well, we should take the gun away from violent people. Well, how do you tell who these violent people are? Do you ask him, hey, are you violent? And does he say, yes, yes, I am very violent. You shouldn't sell me a gun because I'm violent. And I have to ask the question, well, what if the guy wants to buy a gun? Wouldn't he say? I can answer that question. No, I'm not violent. I'm very, very peaceable. And I wouldn't hurt a fly. And sell me the gun. Now, not even God Almighty in the Bible disarms people, and God does not prejudge people. If you violate the law and you go out and kill somebody past tense, then we're going to punish you. If we catch you killing people, we're going to take you out and stone you to death. But God doesn't take people's guns away from them. Doesn't take their swords and their spears. You know, Peter had a sword, and he cut off the high priest servant's ear, remember, in the garden. Peter was armed and dangerous. He used his weapon, cut off a policeman's ear. And when he cut off the policeman's ear, wasn't that assaulting a police officer? Jesus saved him, though. He put this policeman's ear back on so that the policeman couldn't say, hey, this guy Peter cut my ear off. Well, let's look at it. Where is the ear? Well, it's back on my head. And he cut it off. Yeah, when did he cut it off? About an hour ago. About an hour ago, he cut your ear off. And then what happened? Well, this other guy put it back on my head and healed it. No kidding. This guy picked your ear up off the ground, put it on your head, and healed you. Well, that's what the story would be, wouldn't it? Well, if his ear is back on his head, then he hasn't suffered a damage, and if he doesn't have a damage, then he doesn't have a claim. See, under the common law, under the law of God, you have to have a damage in order to have a claim. In order to have a claim, you've got to have done something. You have to suffer a loss. None of us have suffered any loss because a guy is a fugitive from the law. He's on the run. Yeah, he's a fugitive. He isn't paying his child support, and he's running from state to state to avoid paying child support. So we're going to put him on the list and take his right to keep and bear arms away from him in order for the cover story. You know, in order to prevent him from killing somebody or harming somebody with a gun. Why would we suspect that a guy that's on the run as a fugitive is some kind of a threat to the rest of us? So when we take a look at this list, fugitives, mental defectives, illegal aliens, users of drugs or marijuana, those who have renounced their citizenship, excuse me, if you renounce your citizenship because of Revelation 18, verse 4, so that you can obey God and keep his commandments, then why is that a threat to anybody else in the society? Huh? Can you tell me? Now, the cover story is that we're going to limit these people on the list, and we're not going to let them keep or bear arms. We're going to take their right away from them. Well, wait a minute. If you can take the right of these people away from them, can't you take any other rights away from them? And why can't we then expand the list? You know, if there's a lot of bad people out there, let's suppose that you're a speeder, a habitual speeder, and you're out here speeding in your car, or you're driving your car and you didn't get it insured, and you're an uninsured motorist. Or let's suppose you went out and you were working on your house and you didn't get a building permit. Well, then shouldn't we take your right to keep and bear arms away from you because you didn't get a building permit, because you didn't pay your child support? I mean, you know, just stop and think about this in rational terms. We could take your right to keep and bear arms away for all kinds of things, because you're a speeder, because you didn't pay your fine, or, you know. So the purpose behind this taking of people's rights and putting them on the list doesn't have anything to do with the health, safety, or welfare of the public. That's the cover story. The real reason is we want to disarm everybody in America, and the way to do that is to start out with some people that nobody is going to object to. So if you're a fugitive from the law, nobody is going to argue for you and argue that you have your right to keep and bear arms and that you're no threat to the public. If you're mentally defective, nobody cares about mental defectives or illegal aliens or drug users or those who renounce their citizenship or former military personnel with dishonorable discharges. Let's try that one. Let's suppose you're in the Army. And you signed a contract and you agreed that you would perform for the Army. And now you renege on your contract. You do something bad in the Army. You were disrespectful to your and you just won't do this or that, or you wet the bed, or whatever it is that gets you dishonorably discharged. What in the hell has that got to do with your right to vote, or with your right to keep and bear arms, or with any other right that you have, or should have, or did have? It's true, you're a bad guy, and you got a dishonorable discharge, and you shouldn't get any benefits. You shouldn't be able to get retirement benefits, and you shouldn't be able... That's because you didn't fulfill the terms of your contract, and therefore you shouldn't benefit from the terms of the contract. But why would we want to take away this guy's right to keep and bear arms because he was dishonorably discharged? Well, because we can put him on the list. And nobody cares about people who have been dishonorably discharged. See, we could carry it a step further, and we could say, well, all of you gays out there, you should not have the right to keep and bear arms. Not that I'm championing gays, I just wanted to pick a group. I mean, if we could pick gays, well, then couldn't we pick Seventh-day Adventists? Or, you know, couldn't we pick somebody else? We could pick some religious group over here, you know, that's very unpopular, like witches maybe, and then let's take away their right to keep and bear arms. Now, the real reason for taking away people's right to keep and bear arms is so we can disarm the people of America. We want you disarmed. And so we're looking for every excuse that we can. So we want to be able to put you on the list. See? Now, my personal observation here of the Second Amendment would be you should be able to keep and bear arms for whatever reason you want. If you want a fully automatic Uzi submachine gun, I think you ought to have one. Government comes along and says, well, we don't care if you have a fully automatic gun. We just want you to make sure you pay the $235 tax stamp to the IRS. Now, the cover story is that these are weapons that are so dangerous that the general public shouldn't have fully automatic weapons. Boys and girls, the general public isn't barred from having these fully automatic weapons. You can have them. You just have to pay the tax stamp. You got to register the gun. That's probably reasonable control. I can't think of any purpose for a fully automatic gun other than killing people. We've already got a law that says you shall do no murder. God himself has said we don't want you out here killing people. I don't have to have a fully automatic Uzi to go out and kill somebody. Hell, I could do that with a .22, couldn't I? A single-shot .22 would do the job. You know, if you want to kill somebody, you don't have to have an Uzi or a Thompson. All right, so the real purpose that we're dealing with here with these cover stories is that we have official lies, but that's because the government doesn't say, our real purpose is we want to disarm the people of America so that we can more effectively control them. See, they don't want to admit that. That's what the truth is. And so they come up with a cover story, and they say, well, see, we're charged with the job of protecting the health, safety, morals, and welfare of the public. And these people that are fugitives from the law, they're dangerous people. Excuse me, a guy that's a fugitive from the law may be dangerous. A guy who is a dangerous fugitive from the law, do you think that he's going to run around without a gun because you put him on a list? I mean, if we take a leave of our senses, do you think that some man who is a member of Murder Incorporated and his job in life, the way he makes his living is killing people, and maybe he's been a fugitive, you know, maybe he's been convicted, you know, and served time in prison, do you believe that he's going to run around on the streets of New York unarmed because he's on this list? You know, have we taken leave of our senses here? Now, you know, here's my government coming to me, and they're saying, well, we're going to put him on the list. What are you going to do with him? Well, we'll prosecute him for being a fugitive in possession of a firearm. I mean, the guy's already a murderer. What in the hell does he care about you putting him on a list and then saying, well, he's violating the terms of his parole? Oh, come on. Let's grow up and get real here. Can we? The purpose for this law behind the cover story is we want to disarm Joe Sixpack. We don't give a rat's ass about some guy that belongs to Murder Incorporated. You've got people all over America driving up and down the streets that belong to gangs. They're shooting people off the street corners for crying out loud. You don't see government getting excited about that. They get real excited about you and me, you know, if we have a gun. They don't want that. All right, so let's just understand what the purpose behind this is, and let's identify it for the reasons that I've just outlined. Now, who's on this list that could legally have a gun? Listen to this story. Although private individuals may prepare a fledgling corporation's articles of incorporation, no corporation is born until approved by the government. And as such, governments are the true creators of corporations, and corporations are therefore absolutely subject to their government creators' rules and regulations. So you might want to write down a case here called Hale versus Hinkle, 201 U.S. 43. And the salient part of the case is on page 75. Hale, H-A-L-E versus Hinkle, H-E-N-K-L-E, or K-E-L, I can't remember, I don't have it right in front of me now, but Hinkle, H-E-N-K-E-L, I believe it is. 201 U.S. 43. Now go look that up, and we'll take a look at individuals versus corporations. I'll tell you a little story there on page 75. Conversely, as creatures, that is, creations of the state, corporations, not people, are government's true children and natural beneficiaries. Nevertheless, Washington does not find all corporate children equally delightful. Corporations that were extremely popular in one era may be condemned in another era as grotesquely politically incorrect. For example, government no longer holds corporate manufacturers of firearms in the same high esteem as when their guns won the West. In order to disarm Americans, government is simultaneously assaulting corporate firearm manufacturers and the customers seeking to buy those firearms. While some, ostensibly private gun control activists, seek to sue gun manufacturers into poverty, the government itself is attempting to narrow the range of potential gun buyers by broadening the categories of persons legally prohibited from possessing those guns. This next article illuminates an intriguing strategy that's being used by some gun rights activists to maintain America's right to keep and bear arms, particularly for those who are otherwise prohibited from possessing firearms. However, note that I present this strategy only as an example of American independence, ingenuity, and persistent resistance to excessive government control, not as legal advice. So, as with virtually all of this publication's articles, don't attempt to implement any of the following recommendations without doing your own research to prove or disprove the validity of this article's assertions and opinions. All right, now with that disclaimer, unknown to most persons except lawyers and those ATF victims who have been incarcerated in federal prison, it is a federal crime for the following nine categories of persons to possess firearms. The nine categories are fugitives, mental defectives, illegal aliens, users of drugs, those who have renounced their citizenship, former military personnel with dishonorable discharges, persons subject to domestic restraining orders, and persons convicted of misdemeanor domestic crimes of violence. Threatening your wife 20 years ago could be enough. And persons who have been convicted of a crime, potentially punishable by more than a year in prison. A bad check conviction 40 years ago would suffice for that one. Now, Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Section 922G and 924E, mandate up to 10 years imprisonment for any member of these nine classes of prohibited persons who possess firearms. For prohibited persons previously convicted three or more times for drug and certain other crimes, possession of a firearm can result in a mandatory 15 years to life imprisonment without parole. And any person purchasing a modern handgun, rifle, or shotgun from a retailer must sign an ATF Form 4473, swearing that he is not in one of these nine categories. Lying on the form constitutes yet another federal crime. All right, I got to give you a reminder here, and then we'll come back and we'll take this up. Legal firearms for prohibited persons right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing or recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the cover story. The cover story means that the government's lying to you. And sometimes they lie to you directly, and sometimes it's indirect. That is, they just don't tell you all of the truth. They tell you it's the law, all children have to be vaccinated, but they don't tell you that there's exceptions to the law, and maybe you're one of those exceptions. Now, you know, individual agents of government can, if they so desire, I know a young fellow who's a pharmacist, and while he is a pharmacist, he's a druggist, he doesn't use drugs himself. Now, he makes up the drugs that you people want to buy and use. And sometimes he was talking to me the other day, and he says, sometimes people ask me, would you take this drug? And this young fellow says, no, I would never take that drug. It's dangerous. That drug is poison. And sometimes they'll say, well, why do you make them? Because that's my living, and because you want to buy them. Now, you know, if a druggist is making up a poison concoction, and that's his, that he's licensed, he's bonded, he's insured, that's his job, that's what he's trained to do. A druggist is trained and licensed to make up poisons, to sell to people that want to buy them. Now, if you were to ask this very same druggist, would you take this drug? If he's like this young fellow, he said, no, I wouldn't take that drug. What would you do? He said, well, I would treat your disease by going to the cause. What causes this disease? And then I would eliminate the cause. Now, a lot of times people have cause and effect, but they don't want to change. For instance, diabetes is caused by too much sugar in your diet. You people don't want to give up the sugar that's in Coca-Cola and Pepsi and all the good things that you eat. And so you're willing to put up with the inconvenience of having to take insulin and suffering from diabetes so that you can satiate your lusts and your desires by drinking these soda pops. I mean, that's where reality's at. The cover story that we all use is, well, I'm just a victim, and I don't know why I've got diabetes, and I went to the doctor, and it runs in our family, you see, and my mother had diabetes, and her mother had diabetes, and I've got diabetes, and so it's genetic. Oh, no, it isn't genetic. God, when he created you, he didn't have any genetic defects. There wasn't any mistake. When he got through, he said, it's good, it's perfect, it's just fine. You're the one that went out there and turned yourself into a diabetic. You did it. You stuck all of it right through your mouth, every mouthful. And you're totally responsible for your diabetes. In some cases, it's ignorance. I didn't know. But since when does ignorance of the law excuse you from the penalty? And so we have to have a cover story. Individuals, you and I, governments, whenever you want to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass, we need a cover story to cover our ass. Otherwise, we would look stupid. And we don't want to look stupid. So when we can't control our smoking, you know, yeah, I know that smoking causes cancer, and I know smoking causes heart disease, but I don't believe it's going to happen to me, or you know, you get 15 cover stories to cover it, don't you? I mean, everybody that smokes has a cover story. Everybody that has diabetes has a cover story. It ain't my fault. I'm a victim. All right, so now when government comes along and they want to do something that's illegal or unlawful, they want to take away your right to keep and bear arms, they have to have a cover story. And they've got it. We're out here protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the people. We're just doing our job, protecting the American people. No, they're not. They're in the process of taking your rights away from you so that they can control you more effectively, so that they can use you to make bigger and bigger profits, so that they can enslave you. And if you have a gun and you can resist, then that's a threat to us. So we want to take away all of your ability to resist. We want to take away all of your ability to resist us. But that's the purpose. All right, so now that being the case, then let's go on here. Legal firearms for prohibited persons. Now, under these federal firearms laws, a current 50-year-old grandfather who's lived as a model citizen for the past 30 years might sheepishly laugh about being convicted three times back in 1968 for selling small quantities of marijuana. However, this mature model citizen might be shocked to discover that based upon his three 30-year-old convictions for selling pot, he is now prohibited from possessing firearms. And if he gets caught possessing a gun, even a duck hunting gun, a shotgun, he can be classified as an armed career criminal and then be subjected to the enhanced penalty of 15 years to life imprisonment. Isn't that special? Now, let me pause right here and make another observation. It costs around $50,000 a year to lock this guy up in jail. So he's 50 years old. Let's catch this guy. Let's convict him. Let's sentence him to 15 years in prison at $50,000 a year. Times 50,000 times 15 years is $750,000. That's what it's going to cost. Plus the trial, plus the cost of apprehension and police and all the rest of it, probably around $800,000 or more. Let me ask you this. As a tax-paying American citizen, do you want to pay $750,000 for some law and order here? By God, we're going to have law and order, aren't we? We want to have law and order. Now, you got this, remember, a 50-year-old grandfather who's lived a model citizen's life for the last 30 years. But 30 years ago, you know, when he was 20 to 25 years old going to college, he was selling pot. Got caught and convicted three times. This qualifies him as a career criminal now. So the police come to us and they say, hey, we're just protecting the citizens. We're just protecting the public. You've got truckloads, 40,000-pound truckloads of cocaine coming across the border through the border inspection stations, for crying out loud. But hey, we got to have law and order here with this 50-year-old grandfather who got caught three times in the past. Hey, and this guy was out duck hunting, and we checked him out, and he's got three convictions. So what's the cover story? Hey, we're just protecting the public, and I'm just doing my job. As old Mark Twain said one time, he said, you know, there are lies, and then there are damn lies. And most of what comes out of government is a damn lie. Most. Not all. Sometimes the government actually tells us the truth. That's why the government's cover stories always work so well. See, they're telling you the truth 75% of the time, lying to you 25% of the time, so that they can keep you deceived 100% of the time. Isn't that special? Now, there are tens of millions of Americans that fit one of the nine prohibited categories. Tens of millions of people will fit at least one of these nine prohibited categories. There are also over 10,000 prohibited persons in federal penitentiaries for illegal gun possession, including more than 2,000 with the enhanced 15 to life penalty. Let's multiply that up. We've got 2,000 people that are locked up for 15 years at $750,000 each. $750,000 times 2,000. That's $1.5 billion. And by the way, we're spending about $50 billion a year now on law enforcement growth industry. That's just to lock people up, $50 billion a year. Or put another way, you know, if you took that $50 billion a year and applied it to the national debt, you know, that might be some place to start. I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't lock these people up. Hell, I don't know. Maybe it's good public policy. What I'd like to bring to your attention, are you really sure that's the way you want to spend your money? Everybody has to spend their money some way. And when I was a youngster, I used to spend my money burning up airplane gas. I could see that there was way too much airplane gas in the world and it needed to be disposed of. And I said, pour it in my tank. Let me go up in the air and I'll burn that stuff up. I'll get rid of it. And I did. And at that time, I had to pay about 40 or 45 cents a gallon for it, you know. God knows what it costs today. But anyway, you know, I was burning airplane gas. I needed to spend my money somewhere. If you want to spend your money locking people up in prison, paying taxes to support them there, I mean, that's as good as burning airplane gas. I don't think it's near as much fun. I think you'd have more fun burning the gas than you would locking people up in jail, but, you know, to each his own. Now, going on, horror stories abound, and I know of two published decisions where persons were sentenced to 15 years plus. A duck hunter caught with duck decoys and a shotgun, and a man caught with a model 1908 Colt 25 caliber automatic pistol with no ammunition, no clip, and no grips, and the slide was rusted closed. This was not an operational gun. And he was prosecuted and convicted. You see, the law doesn't discriminate between guns that are used or not. I mean, you could be digging in your backyard in your garden, and you could dig up an old rusty gun that had been buried for years and it doesn't work and there's no bullets in it or anything else. But if you're a convicted felon, you know, and you pick that thing up and you got caught with it, you could be prosecuted and jailed. And the rest of us would have to pay $50,000 a year to store you in prison. And I question that. I don't think that that guy is a threat to anybody. These two cases here, what threat is this guy with a shotgun and duck decoys? Or the second guy that's got a 25 caliber automatic pistol with no ammunition, no clip, no grips, and the slide rusted clothes. Now it's costing us $100,000 a year, you and I, to store these guys in prison for these two alleged crimes. And the police will say, we're just doing our job. You see, that's the cover story. We're just doing our job. The truth of the matter is we need people in prison. We have to convict people and put them in prison. It's a part of the law enforcement growth industry. Let me show you how this works. You got a prison, and the prison has 500 beds. And one day, we look around, and we've only got 400 prisoners. We've got 100 vacant beds. What would happen if we didn't have any customers for the prison? We wouldn't have any need for the guards. We wouldn't have any need then for the warden or all of the subcontractors that provide the food and keep the prison running and the heat and the lights and all the rest. I mean, come on. You know, if you're in the real estate business and you've got an apartment house and you've got 20 apartments, 5 of them are empty, 15 of them are rented out, you're running at a loss and you're running over your 5% budgeted vacancy factor. You've got payments to make. You've got, you know, on these prisons, we've got bond issues. I mean, we got bonds to pay to the insurance companies. Prisons aren't bought and paid for with cash. They're bonded. And they have payments. And you taxpayers have to make these payments. And in order to make these payments, we have to have customers. And the customers are the prison. It's the prisoners in the prison. That's the customer. Just like the Holiday Inn has to have vacationers, people that rent their rooms every day. No, these cover stories, we're just doing our job. We're filling up the prison so that we can pay our bills. And I'm just doing my job as a cover story. You and I both know there isn't any need to lock these two guys up. Hey, but we do have a need to fill up those beds in the prison. Now, antique firearms are an exception to the law. Federal law exempts antique firearms from all gun controls. 18 U.S. Code Section 921A-16 defines antique firearms as all guns made prior to 1899, muzzle loaders made anytime, and replicas of pre-1899 cartridge-firing guns made anytime, providing such replica uses cartridges that are not readily available in the ordinary channels of commercial trade. Underline commercial trade because it comes under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. Article 1, Section 8. However, under 26 U.S.C. 5861, that's the IRS code, all cartridge-firing machine guns and short-barreled shotguns are illegal regardless of when they were made. Okay? So you have to get an IRS tax stamp. It isn't that you can't have a sawed-off shotgun. You just have to get a tax stamp for it. It isn't that you can't have an automatic. It's that you got to have the tax stamp. There's a tax law there. So these people are being convicted. You know, you read in the papers, this guy over here was caught. He had a fully automatic gun. You know, like a fully automatic gun. And some, my God, every soldier in the Army has a fully automatic gun. Now, how many of you people out there have served in the Army or the Marines or something like that? Hey, did you learn how to use those fully automatic guns? Well, let me ask you, the rest of you people out there, the guy's a Marine. And he's, you know, maybe he's an old guy, fought on Iwo Jima. You know, he's 90 years old now. Or maybe he's just recently returned from Iraq or Afghanistan or something like that. And he gets caught with a fully automatic Thompson submachine gun. Is he some threat to you or me or anybody else? Isn't he fully trained in the use of them? Now, I could see you. Maybe you'd want to keep one away from me because I don't know how to load one. I don't know how to shoot it. But I guess I could learn, you know, somebody teach me. But, you know, I heard this argument, you know, the reason that we don't want the captains on airliners to carry guns. Can you believe it? It's because they're not trained. Now, let me tell you, I've had many, many pilots come through here. I've never had a pilot come to school here, and I probably have taught 100 pilots, taught a lot of 100 pilots. Every single one of them is a Navy carrier pilot, or he's an Air Force pilot, or he's a Top Gun pilot, or one guy here was a general. He was a brigadier general in the U.S. Air Force, and he flew SR-71s. And all of these guys are airline pilots, and they're all taught and trained how to use guns. They all have a 45 under their armpit when they take off. When those Navy pilots take off that aircraft carrier, do you know what he's got under his armpit? He's got a 45. I presume that the Navy taught him how to use it so that when he gets shot down, you know, over enemy territory, he's got a gun. It ain't much of a gun, you know, but it's better than nothing. And so he's got a gun. But we're told by the National Transportation Safety Board, my God, we couldn't have an airline pilot with a gun up in the cockpit to ward off a terrorist with a box knife. So what we did was we spent $37 billion and created the Department of Homeland Security. Got that? Let me tell you how this goes. Over in Israel, they've got pilots that fly airplanes. And the Jews over there arm all of their pilots. So when you get on an El Al airliner, you should be informed that the pilot, the cockpit crew, I presume that the co-pilot and the flight engineer, they're all packing heat. Can you believe this? Yeah, yeah, that's true. I think if I was going to fly on an airline and I had a choice, I think I'd choose El Al. Here's why. Never in history has an El Al airliner been hijacked. Not one, not yet. Well, it doesn't mean that you can't hijack one of them Jews' airplanes, but you know, I think you're gonna meet some resistance when you come through the cockpit door. Now they said, well, my God, you can't have bullets flying through the air, you know, at 30,000 feet. I wish somebody go over there to Israel and tell them Jews that you can't be shooting them guns at 30,000 feet. Why not? You know, I'm not sure that we use common sense. I'm not sure that we Americans can think anymore. You know that? So we spend $37 billion to protect us from terrorists, and the Jews spend $500 and stick a 45 under the captain's armpit and said, take off, son. Now, if it works for Jews in Israel, why won't it work for Americans in New York? Okay, so this is a cover story. Got that? It's nothing more than a cover story. If it works for the Jews, it'll work for the Germans, it'll work for the Russians. I find it hard to believe. I haven't heard of this. Has anybody hijacked a Chinese airliner or a North Korean airliner? They don't seem to have a problem doing that. They just hijack American airliners and French and English or something like that. But, hey, why don't we look behind these cover stories, huh? And next time we'll take this up right here. As we're looking at muzzle loaders and looking at guns, and what about these guns that are manufactured before 1899? And if you're on this list, could you qualify for one of those? Hey, tune in next time. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.